The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Good Friday to you. Sad Friday morning. Herman Cain left us yesterday. I greatly enjoyed being with Herman Cain. I still remember a Cuyahoga County Republican picnic with Chairman Rob and Herman Cain in 2012, where he just had me in stitches and the crowd rolling. Our friend Larry Elder, his new movie, Uncle Tom, which has done so well, and if you haven't watched it, you can go to the button at HughHewitt.com and click on it. Use my name for a discount. But within Uncle Tom is contained an interview with Herman Cain, which we've excerpted to turn into a little bit of a memorial tribute to Herman Cain. Here it is, cut number 19.
I had a college student ask me one time, how did you deal with color and race when you were climbing the corporate ladder? My answer, I didn't. Let them deal with it. I didn't focus on that. I didn't have time. I went to the president of the Pillsbury Company and said, I need to get involved in some other aspects of the corporation because I want to run one of the business units one day. So he said, we need a lot of leadership in Burger King. You have to go and spend 2 weeks at Whopper College. There really is a Whopper College in Miami. I graduated summa cum laude. I was working for the Department of the Navy. The same day that I started, another white gentleman named Robert started working there also. We had very similar jobs. So the first 12 months, I got outstanding performance 4 quarters in a row. The second year, outstanding performance 4 quarters in a row. And Robert got outstanding performance. But Robert was getting his GS salary increase at least 2 months sooner than me. So I went to Wayne, my supervisor, and said, Robert and I are both doing a great job. He said, yeah. So why is he getting little increases quicker than me? He said, he has a master's degree. I said, oh, it's not because he's white? Nope. He has a master's degree. So you know what I did? I didn't get mad. I went and got me a master's degree.
There are only 4 rungs to this ladder.
Went back. Sat down with Wayne. I said, well, I got a master's degree. I said, the next thing you have open for a promotion. I said, keep me in mind. See you around. And not long after that, they had a special project called a rocket-assisted projector. They had to have someone who was going to be the GS-13 supervisory mathematician to do the special ballistics on this rocket-assisted projector. I got the promotion. And I had 8 white people working for me. It was all about performance, not the color of your skin. So since I now had that master's degree and I had proved myself, I got the job. When I decided to leave Dalgren, never forget the department head, and he called me in for an exit interview. And I never forget Russ. I think he's deceased now. He said, you know, you have taught me something. I said, what? He said, I had never worked with a black person before. You taught me don't judge somebody by the color of their skin.
That was a memorial to Herman Cain that was drawn from Larry Elder's Uncle Tom. I encourage you to watch it. You can, of course, see the tape of this show over at Facebook, my Facebook page. Barack Obama was giving a eulogy as well yesterday. I think it is unfortunate that he politicized it. It was for the great John Lewis. President Bush gave a 6-minute heartfelt salute to John Lewis. President Obama spoke for more than 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes. And part of it was just overtly political, including this excerpt in which he calls for ending the filibuster, which, of course, will lead to legislation expanding the Supreme Court to new D.C. statehood, all the crazy left-wing stuff. Cut number 3, President Obama at John Lewis's funeral yesterday.
If politicians want to honor John, and I'm so grateful for the legacy and work of all the congressional leaders who are here, but there's a better way than a statement calling him a hero.
Right.
You want to honor John? Let's honor him by revitalizing the law that he was willing to die for. And by the way, naming it the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, that is a fine tribute. But John wouldn't want us to stop there, just trying to get back to where we already were. Once we pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, we should keep marching to make it even better by making sure every American is automatically registered to vote, including former inmates who've earned their second chance. Adding polling places and expanding early voting and making Election Day a national holiday. So if you are somebody who's working in a factory or you're a single mom who's got to go to her job and doesn't get time off, you can still cast your ballot. By guaranteeing that every American citizen has equal representation in our government, including the American citizens who live in Washington, D.C. and in Puerto Rico. They're Americans. By ending some of the partisan gerrymandering so that all voters have the power to choose their politicians, not the other way around. And if all this takes eliminating the filibuster, another Jim Crow relic, in order to secure the God-given rights of every American, then that's what we should do. Now, even if we do all this, even if every bogus voter suppression law is struck off the books today, we've got to be honest with ourselves that too many of us choose not to exercise the franchise. Too many of our citizens believe their vote won't make a difference, or they buy into the cynicism that, by the way, is the central strategy of voter suppression to make you discouraged.
Do you get the sense that the president, former President Obama, not going to miss a chance to miss a chance? He even got even more political, cut number 2 at the John Lewis funeral.
But today, we witness with our own eyes police officers kneeling on the necks of Black Americans. George Wallace may be gone, but we can witness our federal government sending agents to use tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators.
All right. Andy Ngo was on with Stuart Varney yesterday, I believe. Yes. Cut number 16, talking about those peaceful protesters.
It's not a myth, and I wish Mr. Nadler would come out here so he can see with his own eyes and hear the explosions that are being thrown by these violent extremists. So day after day now for more than 2 months, we're having people carry out daily violent protests, and it's been getting worse in that the weapons have been they're moving now to potentially kill and maim federal officers.
Wait a minute, that's important stuff. You're on the ground. You are in Portland. What's this about weapons? Tell me more.
So a lot of the weapons are intentionally designed to look innocuous, things like water balloons or water bottles or laser sticks. But as Fox News has reported, these lasers are unregulated. They buy them through eBay or from China or other websites, and they're very high-powered in that they're meant to actually blind and damage the eyes. I've had them directed at me in the course of my undercover work. You can't see anything when one is directed at you, much less a dozen of them. And the water balloons are filled with things such as paint. It's used to blind police, and then may remove the helmet or they can't see. And then if they remove the helmet, then somebody else will launch a
little bit different than President Obama's description. I think you would agree. When we come back, the case for Trump in 2020. You'll want to condense this and post it. Stay tuned to the UUH show. The Trump campaign is a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. Be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is only going to go to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text Hewitt to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's H-E-W-I-T-T to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President, Inc. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt on a Friday morning. All week long, I've been working on assembling the list of President Trump's accomplishments. President Trump's record of accomplishments is pretty easy to compile. Most significantly, he has brought the existential threat posed by the Chinese Communist Party into the sunlight. No more nice words. No more treating the Tiananmen Square massacre as a bug, not a feature. The concentration camps for 1 million Uyghurs in Xinjiang glanced off American consciousness until recently. But when ESPN is reporting on the routine cruelties of the NBA basketball camps run in China, the light is definitely on. Trump pulled that cord. Trump put 2 justices on the Supreme Court, 53 on the Federal Court of Appeals, 144 and counting on the district courts, more than 20 on the specialty courts. The Constitution has been buttressed. Trump's tax cuts, along with the massive deregulation he orchestrated, led to 3.5% unemployment until the Beijing regime acted with criminal recklessness towards a virus that has devastated the world. Economic recovery depends on those rule rollbacks and not just the absurdities like the Clean Power Plan and the Waters of the United States grotesque overreaches into private businesses and onto private property of Americans, but on hundreds of other intrusions by way of fine print. Trump took a military operating in the President Obama's last year on $662 billion and moved that budget by his third year to $721 billion, with more in the budget coming soon. His Navy, necessary to meet China on the high seas, all 355 ships of it is being planned and built. Trump tore up the so-called Iran deal, which was a tower of absurd hopes built on a policy of appeasement and a foundation of hostility to Israel. Trump moved the American embassy to Jerusalem and blessed Israel's necessary annexation of the Golan Heights. His peace plan is the closest to reality since Oslo. Trump took the U.S. out of the idiotic Paris Accords and is instead focused on and delivered American energy independence. People are at work in Pennsylvania as a result, not jetting off to Paris for follow-up seminars. Trump ordered Iran's master terrorist, General Soleimani, killed, and that followed his ordering of the complete physical destruction of the ISIS caliphate and the hunting down of the terrorist chieftain Baghdadi. The former was never contemplated by Obama. The latter couldn't get done by him, even though it was Obama scampering from Iraq in 2011 that led to the rise of ISIS and its 1,000 barbarities. The butcher Assad has twice used chemical weapons, twice had cruise missiles remind him that the red line is back and it is real. Russian mercenaries attacked U.S. troops in Syria and they were mowed down. Not an American was killed. Those are Trump rules of engagement. Even Cuba is back in its box, joined there by Venezuela's dictator Maduro. At home, Trump pushed through long overdue justice reform legislation and the reorganization of the Veterans Administration. And this year, the Great American Outdoors Act that fully funds the Land and Water Conservation Fund. House Democrats passed a piffling bill when COVID-19 arrived, while Trump and the Senate Republicans, led by Mitch McConnell, crafted the Paycheck Protection Plan and other innovations that kept Americans' economy from collapsing, even as it contracted by nearly 10% in the second quarter, as the PRC's principal export, COVID, ravaged the country. Suddenly, borders mattered, and Trump's wall on its way to completion makes obvious sense. Trump negotiated and saw ratified the USMCA. From dairy farms in Wisconsin to border businesses in Arizona, USMCA was a huge win for the U.S. Trump doesn't want to deport the Dreamers and won't, but his deals with Mexico, El Salvador, and Guatemala have helped stem the flow of illegal entries in the United States that Obama was helpless to halt. While establishing himself as the most accessible to the press president in modern times, Trump has also stripped off the veneer of activity from the fake news. Blue bubble journalists are the last to know the contempt in which they are held beyond the Acela corridor and outside Silicon Valley and Hollywood. They mistake their 1% or 2% audience share for success. In fact, 95% of America would rather watch a mystery poetry slam than their news. Contempt defines Main Street attitudes towards cable news and pundits. Trump hammered that home and journalists hate him for it. Blue check Twitter confirms the contempt that elites feel for more than half of America. Trump's brawling, slugging, tempestuous approach to everything and every hour has worn down many, but his road is marked by accomplishment after accomplishment. Former Vice President Biden's nearly 50-year run is marked by, well, you fill that in. Polls say Biden is far ahead. We will see. There's an aesthetic critique of Trump that has persuaded elites he must be beaten, that he is cruel and beneath the office. But Americans want their jobs and security back. They like the police. And yes, most of the time, they mostly admire Trump's styles and almost always his results. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'll be right back.
Everything's all right. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. That's our happy music. It means that Sunny Bunch is here to spread good cheer and bring great delight to the children who listen every morning. Good morning, Sonny.
Hi, Hugh. How are you?
See, that's the cheery voice that we need.
Yeah.
You've taken up residence at the Bulwark?
Yeah, they needed somebody to write about movies there, and I, following the collapse of RebellerMedia.com, had a desire to have some place to write about movies. So,
well, that's good. Congratulations. We still want this podcast to go, but tell us what you were telling us this week.
Sure. So up this week, I'm looking at a couple of movies that I think that your readers are going to, or your listeners are going to be pretty interested in. The first is a movie called Mr. Jones, which is a film about the Ukrainian famine in Soviet Russia in the 1930s.
Okay, you've taken on yourself a hard sell, Sonny. Sell away.
Yeah. Well, so it is as I said, it's set in the 1930s. It is about the Ukrainian famine, but really what it's about is Western the ability of the West to look at the famine as it was happening and ignore it. To look at the rise of Stalin and kind of turn a blind eye to the evils that was going on. It is very much a film about there's really no better way to put it, but the evil of Walter Duranty of the New York Times and his desire to kind of suck up to Stalin and let bad things happen.
How so timely, given the concentration camps of the Uyghurs in Xinjiang and the NBA camps that have been, I mean, very timely.
Yeah, yeah. So James Norton stars as Gareth Jones, who is a Welsh government officials slash freelance journalists who went to the Soviet Union trying to figure out how they had accomplished, you know, the Soviet miracle of the 1930s, right? How they had managed to stand up multiple industries and, you know, how they had managed to, you know, really get their economy going in the midst of the Great Depression. And when he gets there, he realizes what has happened is that the breadbasket of the Soviet Union, the Ukraine, has been just destroyed, has been decimated. The people there are starving. Whole villages have been wiped out. Bodies litter the sides of the road from starvation. And he tries to tell the rest of the world about this, and nobody really wants to hear it. Nobody wants to hear about this awful news, least of which, again, is Walter Duranty, who is played by Peter Sarsgaard in this film, and just plays him with the perfect level of kind of, I don't know,
contemptuous disdain evil for normal people.
Yeah, I just really, really, it's something. I mean, it's really he is very close to being a mustache twirling villain in this. There is one scene, and I thought for sure this was made up nonsense, but I looked it up, and apparently it's more or less true. There's one scene in this film where Walter Duranty is literally hosting an orgy at his Moscow flat, and it was something, you know, it was something he did in order to get information on people that the Soviets could then use against them, blackmail material.
Oh my gosh. Was this a big screen production? Was this originally going to go to the theaters?
So this is made by a Polish director whose last name is Holland. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the first name. But she is a relatively well known foreign director. This movie's in English, and it was supposed to be on big screens. It was supposed to be a limited run on big screens, probably, but with the potential of being a full run. And because of the coronavirus, of course, it's not in theaters. It's just out on VOD now. It's very much worth checking out.
Netflix, you say?
Not on Netflix, just on VOD. You got to rent
VOD. Okay. I am going to watch that. Now let's get to the Outpost. A backstory on this. I spent a long time interviewing Jake Tapper when his book came out. I think the movie is terrific. Jake and I are not on speaking terms right now. We've had a quarrel, but this is still, I think, a 5-star movie.
I don't know that it's a 5-star movie, but it's a solid, I would say it's a solid 4 out of 5-star movie. So the Outpost is very interesting to me. So the Outpost is based on
Cap Keating.
Yeah, P.F. Keating, this is essentially, I don't know if it's the most well-known battle of the war in Afghanistan, but it is one of the most well-known battles out of the war of Afghanistan. And it takes place in this outpost that is essentially in the bottom of a valley surrounded by the Hindu Kush Mountains. Imagine the least defensible position that you could possibly choose to stick an army base.
Sonny, let me ask you, did you read Tapper's book, The Outpost, before?
I've not read the book, no.
The sighting of this base is the quintessential stupid big army move, and it comes through in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a movie about, like, the stupidity of the brass and the idiocy of trying to of essentially not knowing what you're trying to accomplish in a certain area in a military setting. So anyway, this base is in essentially the bottom of a hole. And if you know anything about fighting war, you always go for the high ground, right? You want the high ground. That's where you can get lines of sight and all that sort of stuff. And instead they put it at they choose the low ground to fight in. What's interesting about this film to me, is the first hour where you're with the men and you're living with them in this hole. And it is this weird mix of monotony, which is a lot of what military life, even in deployment, is a lot of, like, kind of standing around and, you know, cleaning out latrines and that sort of thing. Right. And also, like, life or death attacks and horror. just mixed in all the time. And it's made worse by the fact that, again, they're in this totally indefensible position. And it is, I don't say this to be glib, and I don't want this to come off sounding glib, but there, the filmmakers do an interesting thing. Maybe this is in the book, you can tell me, but director Rob Bowie and writers Eric Johnson and Paul Tamasi do an interesting thing where the film is essentially broken up into sections based on the commander of the outpost at any given time, right?
Yes, and that is the book. Yep.
Okay, so they do it. They do it by just flashing the last name of the commander up, and because they cycle through so many commanders in that first hour, it has a very Spinal Tap feel to it. Like every time they replace the drummer, you know, here's the new commander. Here's the new commander. Here's the new commander. And it just like it gets to the almost absurd nature of trying to.
Well, also, I don't know if you noticed it. One of the things the book did that I thought the movie captured is the utter absurdity of dealing with the locals when they bring in the body and they ask for recompense. Yeah. And again and again and again and again. And it really, the way, I think it makes the case for withdrawing to the big base, Al-Asad, or the equivalent Bagram in Afghanistan, and operating from there because these forward operating bases, FOB Keating, named for the fellow who went over the cliff trying to drive the truck, which is in the movie. It's wearying, right, to watch that movie until it's heroic.
Right. I mean, this is the real problem with the whole Afghanistan mission, right, is that you cannot – the locals have no interest in what we are trying to do. They mostly just want us gone. And if you cannot work with them, then what's the point of these forward operating bases? I mean, this is one of the big questions of the movie, is that, like, how are you supposed to deal with these locals who at one point can't even tell the difference between the Americans who are there now and the Russians who had been there 20 years before?
Yeah, I think it's in Kumar province, but the bottom line is the Hindu Kush has never been, since Alexander the Great, from the time of the Britons to the Russians to us, you can control Kandahar, you can very much control Kabul, but you cannot control the Hindu Kush.
Right, right. So anyway, so that's the first half of this movie, is kind of being with these guys, watching them as they struggle through this impossible situation, getting to know them a little bit, and then the last hour of the film is a big battle sequence. It's the battle of the base. Again, probably the most famous battle from the Afghanistan War. Two men who won Medal of Honor fought in this building. There's a title card.
Two Medal of Honors were received. Many other Silver Stars, Bronze Stars. But did you think the action sequences were understandable? I did, which I think distinguishes it from a lot of things like Full Metal Jacket and Platoon. I think I actually understood what was going on. And I'm a civilian.
Yeah. No, I would say it was pretty understandable. You got a decent sense for it. And again, this is like a good thing about the film just in general, is you got a good sense of the geography of the space.
Yes.
Which is always a hard thing to do in battle and in this sort of thing in particular. It's not quite as good as like Black Hawk Down. I think Black Hawk Down is still the kind of A-plus look at war fighting on film.
Look, heroism in both places, fewer moving parts in Somalia, by which I mean fewer locations to understand.
Yes. Well, fewer locations here, I would say, in Afghanistan. I mean, it's here in one base.
About 30 fire points, and that got confusing. In Somalia, there's the first helicopter crash, and there's the expeditionary force. I'll have to go back and rewatch it. But bottom line, Sonny, because we're running out of time, should people watch The Outpost?
Totally. I think it's very much, again, I think people should watch this. And I do think it is a movie that will kind of end up being almost a definitional movie of the war in Afghanistan, if for no other reason, for the sense of what it is like to be in a conflict like this.
I agree. Isn't it sad it's not big screen? It should have been a big screen movie.
Yeah, I mean, I actually looked it up before we got on the horn, and it is playing in a few theaters in the Texas area. I mean, I think it's one of these movies that is getting, you know, one or two show times a day at theaters around the city. Who knows who's actually going to them?
I hope people watch it on their little screen. It's a very, very, it was a great book. It's a good movie. And Sonny Bunch, thank you, my friend. Follow Sonny Bunch at Sonny Bunch on Twitter. You can always find out, and he'll be back next Friday. Always a pleasure to talk with him. When we come back, Tarzana Joe, I also have to tell you about the market. Amazon, I told you yesterday it was going to have a blowout quarter. Little did I know it would have the quarter of all quarters. I'll tell you about that after the break. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Joined now by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello, you.
How did the earthquake yesterday treat you? Did it wake you up?
It did indeed. And my favorite thing about it is when they show the epicenter on the TV news, it's right under someone's neighborhood. It's just under a block. You know, here's the street, here's the cross section. It was at the intersection of 3rd and Elm, as opposed to, you know, out in the desert someplace.
Well, that person had quite the wake-up call,
yeah,
didn't they?
Indeed.
Yesterday Dwayne was telling me that the 405 connected with the 210. Can you believe that?
Without the Thomas Guide,
it's hopeless. I don't know how this show's been on the air for 20 years. Anyway, tell me your poem.
All right, we'll start with that. We all have studied literature, both basic and comparative, and understand our goal should be to recognize the narrative. But if we paid attention, we gathered, did we not, the moral of the story is more than just the plot. It seems the same with politics. The story has a purpose, but everything that matters exists below the surface. In Portland, they would have you think some building is beset. The courthouse is the target, and the narrative is met. The anger that's encouraged by the nightly chants and calls is aimed by righteous people at some windows and some walls. Within those walls, however, as the Constitution tells, are the bastions of our liberty and the place where justice dwells. Destruction of this edifice by zealots or their mothers is not defense of freedom. It's denying it to others. And even if it looks as though the siege may soon be ended, wherever law is threatened, its home must be defended. Burn down the halls of justice to achieve what you pursue, and there won't be any justice left when power turns on you.
I thought you were going to say when Antifa comes for you.
Well, I'm just paraphrasing my favorite scene from A Man for All Seasons.
No, you're right. When they take down all the trees, then where shall you hide? I can't remember that line, but it was a great line.
You're close.
Yeah. When they burn down when the devil turns.
When the devil turns on you, where will you hide?
Yeah. Joe, that was wonderful. That will be at TarzanaJoe.com, I assume.
It will indeed.
Has the poetry business rebounded?
Continuing to be as popular as ever.
Do you know the GDP went 40% down in the second quarter? Did your poetry go down 40% in the second quarter?
I did a little better than the GDP.
Oh, that's good to hear. And all of your poetry commissions, write TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. Poems and words made in the USA. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Investment advice now from Hugh Hewitt. I believe you ought to buy Birch Gold, right? I tell you, you should buy gold all the time, and you can text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Gold is up to 1972 this morning. It's up a percent and a half. I told you to buy it when it was in the 1400, 1972. And that's because they know inflation will eventually catch up with the amount of money the world is pouring into COVID relief, trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars all across the globe. And gold will go up, up, up. And so you can go to HughGold.com and move portion of your IRA or 401k, not all of it, 10, 20, 30% over to precious metals backed Birch Gold maintained IRA or 401k. Or you can just buy gold and put it in your safety deposit box from Birch Gold via HughGold.com. But I told you about Amazon yesterday. I was expecting a pretty good quarter. Now, you know Hugh Hewitt's investment advice. You are not as smart as the full-time investment bankers who invest. So you'll get killed if you try and day trade. That's Hugh Hewitt's advice. Buy one stock and buy a mutual fund with the market. You know, if you believe in the market, which I do, you buy spiders, which are devices to just buy the S&P 500 or buy the NASDAQ or buy the Dow. Whatever it is you want to do, just buy mutual funds. Except you might want to have some fun and buy one or two stocks. I only have one stock, Amazon. And I used to have only one stock, Apple. They both did yesterday. I don't know who did better. They just had, they crushed it. So did Facebook, as did Google. It's the first time all the four tech giants reported on the same day, and they all crushed it. But Amazon, I just can't even believe it. I'm reading from The Motley Fool. Saving the best for last, Amazon fired on all cylinders during Q2. The e-commerce and cloud computing company's revenue surged 40% year over year to $88.9 billion with a B dollars. Analysts on average expected revenue to increase 28.6% to $81.5 billion. Earning per share was $10.30. Soaring past a consensus forecast of $1.46. Did you hear that? Analysts on Wall Street that do this full time thought Amazon was going to make $1.46 per share. They made $10.30 per share. Everything grew like wildfire, and they projected more of it for Q3. So, you know, I don't know where Amazon will end up today. It'll probably make an all-time high. But I'm telling you, don't try and be smarter than the smart guys. And when the smart guys can't even get within one-tenth of a growth stock, then you really don't have a chance, right? You day trader dummies out there, go get a job. You're not going to make money in the long term. Go get a job. Buy Amazon or buy Apple or buy one stock, maybe two if you just want to play and have some fun, like a hobby, like an investment club. But listen to Hugh Hewitt's investment advice. You're no good at it. You can't do that. You can't predict. If they can't predict, you can't predict. You are not the mad genius in your basement day trading away. That's not you. Be smart. Get a job and let somebody else invest your money. I'll be right back, America. Hour number two of the Hugh Hewitt Show coming right up.